again. And the suspension of Quintez Cephas leaves the Wisconsin Badgers without one of its top receivers for the foreseeable future. Cephas was charged with felony sexual assault on Monday, accused of misconduct involving two women at his apartment last April. Now, just ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg, let's take a look at the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. On this Tuesday, 21st of August, cloudy and seasonal, 70% chance of more rain. Today's high, 77. Tonight, cloudy, mild, 50-50 chance of more rain. Overnight low, 55. And a couple of days to dry out. Wednesday, sunny and 76. Thursday, sunny and 79. And then a 60% chance of rain again on Friday. Here are the numbers right now. Wind is from the north at 12. Humidity, 96%. Overcast, 70 degrees Kenosha, 69 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really delighted to be spending this portion of WGTD's morning show with a young man from Carthage who is about to be a senior, about to begin his senior year as a communication major and a music and business minor. His name is Isaac Life. And I know Isaac primarily for two reasons. He is one of Carthage's best percussionists. And I also got to really first get to know Isaac a bit a couple of years ago for J-Term Opera, when J-Term Opera in part presented a new opera that I composed called Black September. And Isaac did an interview with me to talk about that experience, and I was really impressed with the intelligence of his questions and just the instincts that he had in that kind of situation. Quite exceptional for someone his age. So that's the way in which I know Isaac. One way or another, I found out not too long ago that Isaac spent a good portion of the summer in Atlanta, Georgia, as a paid intern at CNN. As part of his communication study at Carthage. And that just sounded too interesting to pass up. And so I'm excited to be spending the next few minutes with Isaac, finding out about what his experiences were at CNN and the kind of things that he was doing and the sort of things he's hoping to do once he is done with Carthage. So Isaac is here recording this interview during a brief visit back to Kenosha. His dad's with him as well. And Isaac, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hi, Greg. Thank you.
Good to have you here.
I didn't realize I'm returning the favor. You know, these interviews, we go back and forth.
There you go. Tit for tat. So let's find out a little bit about where you're from. I think you're from Minnesota originally.
That's right.
And just tell us a little bit about what you were interested in growing up, and then at what point music and communication and some of these other things started to be a part of your life.
Yeah, so I'm a Minnesota native. Grew up on Lake Minnetonka. Spent my whole life there. You know, high school, I got more and more interested in video. When I was like 4 years old or something, Dad handed me a tape camcorder, and you know, I started making these stop motion things where I would record just, you know, a few frames and then, you know, move a block or something. My little toys. It was
really?
Great. We still actually have the recordings somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah, we've digitized them by now.
Well, someday when you're famous, that can be part of the documentary retrospective on your career.
Right. That's right. My passion for video just grew, and especially in high school, as I, you know, got a car and had more and more freedom, I could expand into that and got involved in studios. And, you know, by the time I was out of high school, I'd worked with Good Morning America, ESPN. I'd worked live sports broadcasts. Really had the ability to follow my dreams. And I even started my own company that I still run back in Minnesota.
Really? Doing what?
I record city council meetings.
Wow.
So I hire that out to people, and it's paying my way through college.
Wow. And what kind of films were you making for fun? I mean, as this interest sort of took hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, it was just grab a camera and run around with friends. And, you know, I especially remember liking school projects because that would give me a lot of direction. I struggle with having too open of a mind. So, like, this last semester I took a film course with a new professor at Carthage, Nick Pilarski. And I remember struggling so much with, like, I can do anything. Like, give me a little direction. Like, tell me what I need to do. So I really like having a direction, which is why I'm so interested in video production, is you have a client who tells you this is what we want, and then I get to do all these other things about it. Like, I have a starting direction.
Right. So when the whole world's open to you, it's hard to know. So, I mean, yes. When you say, like, you were running around with friends, I mean, like, were you recording little adventures and that kind of thing?
So we'd do stuff like, I remember when the GoPro came out, we grabbed a GoPro and we would go on the lake or we'd run around. I bought a drone. I remember after seeing, do you know OK Go?
Yeah.
So they make these incredible viral music videos, and one of them that was it was shot on a drone. And I remember immediately after that, I was like, I need a drone. and I remember that winter, something happened where, our lake freezes over and it's safe to walk on. So we run out there and do stuff. But the sun had been out, so it melted a little bit, which made this nice glassy reflection. So it looks like you're just kind of walking on water. And I got the drone out and got some really good footage of that got picked up by, like, a news agency, and
wow.
That was cool.
Wow. So I have a feeling you were a young man where your Christmas list and your birthday list was always video equipment of one kind or another.
That is absolutely true, yes.
Right. So if I may ask so personal a question, what do you own at this point in time as a still a very young man? I mean, what kind of stuff have you amassed over the years?
Yeah, so I own some stuff. I buy a camera probably every 2 years. I remember senior year of high school, I took a trip to New York, bought like $1,000 camera. You know, that was a big purchase for a high schooler.
Wow.
And started to delve into that. And then just a little over a year ago, I got a new camera, a Sony. I try to use my money wisely. So I do a lot of research before I buy something, but I went on eBay and bought a $500 light kit for like $100 because something didn't work with it. So I'm happy with it. I've got a drone still. I've got a GoPro. I just kind of pick up these things over time. But especially lately, I haven't had to spend too much money on gear because I've been working with this studio in town called Isley Creative. And these guys have been very nice to me, and they let me use their gear. I shot a short film on their, you know, $3,000 camera and a whole kit of lenses that I could never afford. Or, you know, I'd rather live in a house.
right.
Yeah, so luckily lately I've had access to a lot of this equipment and, you know, went out to Atlanta where my department had access to these cameras that, I wouldn't buy personally. But they have them.
Or not yet.
Yes.
Yeah. So it feels funny to ask this of somebody who's, what are you, 21 years old?
I'm 21.
Yeah. Usually I would ask this of someone who's maybe 50 or 60. You know, what are the changes that you've seen in technology over the course of doing this over decades? And, of course, we're not talking about that kind of span of time. But even in the relatively brief span of time we're talking about, how dramatically has the technology changed? I don't mean so much the emergence of drones, for instance, but in terms of actual film cameras and the way this is captured.
Well, everything's so accessible now. I spend a lot of time thinking about how many cameras everybody has. You know, I hop in my car, I've got a dash cam that cost $50. Everybody's got a camera. And I've also seen things like Snapchat and Facebook and Instagram. Everybody's a cinematographer now. Everybody knows how to, like, frame pictures well. You know, you throw a camera in my grandma's hands and she struggles with it a little more than, a 15-year-old who wants to get that perfect shot. And we're also seeing technology advance, and you just get higher quality photos. Cameras are advancing even faster and faster. You see changes in the software that you use on your computer. It's fun to watch because I do think it's just speeding up, and it's very competitive, and anybody can do anything.
Right. So did you choose Carthage because of its communication major and what it offered? Is that what drew you to Carthage?
I mean, Carthage has a lot of things going for it, definitely. The communication major interested me. I was offered a decent scholarship, which was a big part of it. I actually didn't search too hard for schools. I think I had Carthage chosen by a month into my senior year of high school.
Wow.
And we visited Carthage probably when I was a junior in high school, and everything clicked. So we stuck with that. I will admit Carthage doesn't have the strongest video program, which is why they just hired a long-term position film professor. They're hoping to build that up, which is exciting for me. But I don't want to go around advertising this too much, but I think I own better equipment than Carthage does when it comes to creating videos.
Yeah.
Because the student body just isn't passionate about it right now.
Right, absolutely. But that certainly can change. But, of course, that's also one reason why you've, in some ways, it's encouraged you to make connections with
absolutely.
Other entities and
yes.
so on and kind of make this happen the best you can.
And I did know that was going to be coming. You know, I chose a communication major, not a film major, not screen media studies. The communication major has been great for expanding my abilities as a presenter, as a speaker, as a storyteller. It's given me a lot of, you know, I spend time in class thinking about how to tell a story, which is more important than the film equipment you use.
Right. And, of course, there's other means by which to kind of augment some of those other studies specifically about the art of filmmaking.
Yes.
We're speaking with Isaac Life, who is about to begin his senior year at Carthage College as a communication major, also music and business minor. And what prompted me to invite Isaac to the morning show is because he had the opportunity to enjoy a paid internship at CNN. And so we're going to be finding out about that. Ahead of that, though, Isaac, as you were recounting some of your earlier exploits as a budding filmmaker, you were really doing some name-dropping there with Good Morning America and this and that.
Yeah.
Can you just revisit that for a moment? I mean, how is it that someone who's just a scrawny little teenager in Minnesota is making those kind of connections?
Right. So same as Carthage, high school didn't offer much in the way of film or video. I went to a high school of under 1,000 people, so we didn't have this great big equipment. So I had to go out and find my own opportunities. So a mile away from the house I'd lived in all my life, there was a satellite truck company. So this is a company that I don't know what that truck cost, but it has a satellite dish and all this other digital news gathering equipment in the back. So I got in touch with them and just started to come into their office more and more and, you know, play with their equipment that, you know, I could only dream of buying.
You just asked them if you, because you were interested and curious.
Yeah, so they were pretty happy to have me shadow on trips. At one point I would start working with them as a production assistant, you know, as more and more I learned how to set up a light or unpack this, you know, grab. There's a lot of terms as you get deeper into any industry.
Sure.
And so, you know, as I started to learn that, they would be more willing to pay me. I remember we did a shoot with Polaris once. If you've ever seen those three-wheeled, they look like a sports car. And
right.
Yeah, it's called the Slingshot. But, you know, we did an opening ad for that when that was released. And so through that, I remember one time we went to Michigan, and I helped out on a Good Morning America shoot with Ginger Z is her name. She's the weather lady. She was just doing a remote shoot from these beautiful rocks, the pictured rocks in Michigan up in the UP. That was a great opportunity. So then there I connected with somebody at Good Morning America. And I remember I went out to New York that following summer, and I got to tour the studio and like see all these famous hosts. I also got involved with ESPN. Basically, we would broadcast Minnesota United games. Now they're in the MLS, but it's a soccer league. And basically, I was in touch with that one company in my town, and they referred me because they said, hey, he's good with technology. They were looking for somebody to operate the graphics, so like the score bug, lower thirds, any visuals you see on screen that's not just real-life camera. That was me, so they just kind of threw me into it. My first game was at the University of Minnesota Stadium, TCF Bank Stadium, and I was up on the Jumbotron after like an hour of learning the software, and that was a rough game. The director was yelling at me. I remember I was shaking. Like I didn't know anything about soccer. I didn't know this program. But of course, I came back the next week and tried it again. It was a little better, and then by the third or fourth week, I remember it was my best broadcast. And since then, you know, I'm friends with the director. He's now the VP of broadcasting for one of the big leagues of soccer in America, and yeah, he's a great guy.
Wow. And if you can survive that, you can survive just about anything.
I like to push through.
Yeah. Wow. Excellent. So explain how this opportunity came your way to have a paid internship at CNN. I mean,
right.
How did you maybe find out about, what was the means by which you found out about the opportunity?
That's a great story. I love telling this one. So last year I went into my junior year at Carthage knowing that I wanted to step up my professional game. I finally had a car for the first time. I was living off campus. This was an opportunity to expand myself and get to know the Kenosha, Chicago, Milwaukee areas, how they do video production. So I remember I was looking for through the bridge, the Carthage newsletter, as all good students and faculty watch that newsletter. maybe not as much as they should, but yeah. Something caught my eye about the it's an alumni mentor program. And I was like, yeah. So I signed up, filled out a form about what I was interested in, what my major was, things like that. And, you know, school started. In the first week, we had a meeting. I walked into a room and they handed me a sheet that said, Adrian, here's her email. She was a religion major. And I went, why have I been paired with a religion major? I'm looking to get into video production and media. I want to start meeting people in the media industry. So I remember I wrote this email and it was a little sharp. It was like, hey, so you're a religion major. What are you going to teach me about video production? And of course, you know, somebody came by and was like, you're kind of putting her on the spot. So I softened up my email, which I'm very thankful that somebody caught me and told me, hey, don't be that guy. And so I sent the email. And of course, she got back to me a week later and was like, hey, Isaac, it's nice to talk to you. I'm I was a religion major, but I'm currently the director of tech training at CNN. And I was like, oh, okay.
You almost made a really bad mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she would have taken it well. You know, she's a great person. But I softened up. And so, of course, I responded and was like, hey, great. And so over the fall, we would talk once a week for half an hour. We would just go through, you know, my resume, my LinkedIn, how to network with people and how to connect with people, how to be most effective in how you're spending your time professionally. And, you know, as time went on, I learned more about her and her department. And by January, you know, she said, people are starting to look into summer internships and I want you to apply to my department's job. And so she showed me the site, turnerjobs.com, Turner being Turner Broadcasting, Ted Turner. They own CNN, Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, TNT. They do a lot. It's a big company that was just acquired by AT&T, actually. Mm-hmm. So this site has all these jobs on it. You know, I would look through all these media internships, and so I applied to, I think, about 8, and ended up interviewing for her department's position, tech training. And so what I've been told since then is that so she's at the top, and then there's 2 supervisors below her, and then there's about 10 people, give or take, in the whole department. But those 2 supervisors, she said, I like Isaac a lot. I'm going to let you 2 decide who to hire, though. You know, you don't have to choose Isaac. But luckily they did. They still went with me, which was great. So Adrian's been a great mentor. One of the reasons that she was so hands-off with the final choosing is that, and I only found this out about a month before I went to Atlanta, she was like, hey, I'm actually super pregnant and will be leaving for maternity leave 3 days into your internship.
Ah.
So, you know, I got to Atlanta, spent 3 days working in her department, and saw her off on that Wednesday, and she has since had a beautiful baby girl.
Huh.
And that's the last time I saw her.
Gotcha. But I can see then how, in a sense, it was fairly irrelevant. I mean, her comfort level with you, because she wasn't going to be working with you for the vast majority of
this
internship.
Correct.
So it was more important that the supervisors underneath her felt good about bringing you aboard.
And so, you know, I like to think that I earned it fair and square, but, you know, there was a connection there. And I'm sure that my name got discussed a lot more than most other interns that they were considering.
Sure.
No, but I'm very thankful for knowing her and being connected with her. So that's good.
And I'm glad you mentioned all that she did for you, even ahead of this internship. I mean, it sounds like she was someone who really took this matter of mentorship very seriously. It sounds like you did too. It sounds like you appreciated all that she had to offer you in terms of really thoughtful questions and wise suggestions about
very much
how to make this happen. So explain this department at CNN, what it is all about, and then we'll talk about what you got to do within this department of tech training.
So tech training sounds like IT, information technology. it sounds like the number you call when your computer's not working. That is 100% not what our department did. We were educators. So CNN has all these different programs used to make news. You know, we've got a proprietary software website that's about storing video. It can store 7,000 hours of footage a week.
And that's your own thing that no one else
that
has.
That is 100% specific to CNN. It was developed for CNN. Nobody else has access to the software. There's a software called Avid iNews, Avid being the nonlinear editing software. They have some software about it's where all the show teams work. Like, if this software crashed, CNN wouldn't be able to go on. It's called iNews, and they write their stories in it. It's where all the show teams work. So you've got associate producers spending hours in it a day, and editors and copywriters doing all this work through it. And so that is, even by the end of my internship, I couldn't quite navigate it fully. I didn't know all the different functions that it was being used for. So that's some software that you need to be taught on. So the purpose of the tech training department is, when you get hired at CNN, we're here to teach you how to use this software so that you can be an effective employee and not just go to your boss saying, how do I use this? So it was fairly introductory, but it's important that we give you this hour of teaching most effectively, as opposed to your boss sitting with you for 5 hours on your first day.
Right. So this was all stuff that was brand new to you.
Yes.
Although I suppose there are certain functions that would be fairly basic when you do this kind of work.
Yeah.
But the exact way that it would function would be different from anything you'd ever used before.
Yes.
Can you help us understand maybe one example of something where this was a software brand new to you that did things you've done before but in a little different way? Or, I mean, to help us understand what you had to master before you could be involved in teaching other people.
Right. So I never reached a point where I was teaching courses, but, you know, I did have to, like, learn how my coworkers worked and what they were doing. I was focused on video content, so I would make video tutorials, and I spent a lot of my summer working on one of my coworkers was developing a course. Basically, when he arrived at CNN, he was a newbie. He was just hired in January. He said that he was kind of confused about what all the different systems do. You know, we've got all these different departments. We've got affiliate content center and news gathering and social discovery and mobile programming, all these different departments. He didn't know what they did, what they used, what software they were on. So I worked with him to make this video where he would go and interview people at the top of each department, and they would explain, this is the content management system. This is what we use to update the website. So I spent a lot of summer editing that, and it was very helpful for me to learn how CNN functions.
I was just going to say, it sounds like it was a very close examination of how CNN itself is put together and all of these different entities within it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's a course he's developing, and, you know, I worked on this 7-minute introductory video that they're going to watch at the beginning of the class.
Fantastic. So tell us about your first day. I mean, CNN is located somewhere in Atlanta. I mean, tell us what the place sort of looks like and what you experienced and saw your first day.
So first day, was worried about Atlanta traffic. Everybody's talked about that, and I was like, okay, I'm going to leave half an hour early because I'm going to get there, and I have no idea where I'm going. It's right on the outskirts of downtown. It's immediately next door to this brand-new stadium, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is where the Falcons play and Atlanta United play. And so that's a beautiful stadium, but I'm getting off track. I woke up early, got there, was there like 15 minutes early, and of course all the other interns were also there early because we're young go-getters who get worried about being late to things like that.
Right. Is it one mammoth building or kind of a campus of different structures?
No, it's not a campus. It's one huge building where they basically took three towers. One of them's a hotel, the Omni Hotel, and then there's a north and south tower that are about 15 stories tall. And they kind of enclosed it all in glass, almost like if you've seen the atrium of the Mall of America, going back to my Minnesota roots.
Yeah.
So there's one big glass enclosure, and it's beautiful in there. And they've got a food court, and it's almost like a mall for the public. And then you go up a floor, and it's all CNN stuff where 2,500 employees are headquartered.
Wow. And how many interns are we talking about this summer, roughly, at least?
So CNN, I think there were about 60 of us. But across Turner, it was probably more like 130 because you've got Turner Sports, you've got Filmstruck, which is their Time Warner classic movies stuff, and Cartoon Network and Adult Swim also.
Right.
But CNN, I think, was about 60.
Yeah. So did you hit the ground running, or was the start of your internship, you know, kind
of? We had an orientation day. So I don't totally remember what happened that day. You know, it was just a blur of our internship coordinator telling us stuff. And I remember I stayed tuned in, but it was like 6 hours of a lot of information.
Right.
And so I kept up well enough, and we, you know, talked to the security person. He said, don't bring guns into the building and stuff. And I don't totally remember orientation day, but we had lunch, and I think we did, you know, those cheesy introductions where you're sitting next to somebody and you write down on a paper, I'm from Minnesota, I like videos, and my favorite movie is Office Space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you switch and you read them off and introduce each other.
Right.
I do remember noticing right from orientation, it was the most diverse environment I've ever been in. Hmm. You know, so I was sitting next to somebody from Indonesia.
Ah.
Is where she was from.
Wow.
And so, you know, Minnesota and Wisconsin, not super diverse.
Right.
Atlanta, with a bunch of interns that are from all around the world, pretty diverse.
Wow.
It was cool.
How much did you have to do with other interns once you got really into the meat of your internship? Were you mostly working with the staff of CNN?
Yeah, in my job, I had very little interaction. As far as the job description goes, I had nothing to do with other interns. There was another intern in my department. My department was another 7 people, and then it was actually spread out in addition to the 7 people in my office. There were 3 in New York, 1 in D.C., and my immediate supervisor was actually based in London. I never actually met him.
Wow.
Which is an interesting workflow, you know, to sit down at work, and he's already 5 hours into the day, and he's like, hey, Ben, what's going on? And I'm sitting down to work, gonna grab a coffee.
Yeah.
But internship interaction, luckily, there were a lot of, Turner has a very strong internship program, and that's something you hear people say, but that was definitely true. They were very... My office administrator was happy to get me shadowing, so I, you know, sat and shadowed a news team. I sat and shadowed a bunch of editors. I sat with E-League, which is this brand new leg of Turner that broadcasts video games on TBS, which is something I've been interested in since it began 3 years ago. So they were happy to get me out there and meeting new people. Work-wise, I was working with the other employees in my department, but interns... I also got to know well through, we would have meetings pretty often, you know, where the president of CNN, he would call in and give us an interview. Like, we asked him questions and got to know who he is.
Wow.
So that's something where I sit down and I'm among other interns. Housing, I was living with 2 people at Adult Swim and 1 person, a meteorology intern at CNN. So housing was also a big plus that I could meet other interns and interact with them on weekends. And we had these programs called Choose ATL, where it's this, I assume it's a nonprofit. They're trying to encourage the fresh talent. So these young, talented interns at CNN is based in Atlanta, and Delta, and there's a few other companies that I didn't really know. But they're trying to show off Atlanta, so they would take us to these bars and a brewery, give us pizza. They took us to a Braves game where we get to do all this free stuff, and they're trying to be like, hey, Atlanta's cool. Interns, stick around. Make our city better.
Right. Wonderful.
So that was another way to make friends.
Sure. We're speaking with Isaac Leif, who just finished a 10-week internship with CNN down in Atlanta, Georgia. So internships really vary in that in some cases an intern is kind of a token presence, and really you're being kind of allowed to watch other people do meaningful work. And then in other cases, an intern is really right in there working and actually contributing in a meaningful way. So where did this internship fall in that? And, of course, there can be any place in between those two that I just
of course,
painted.
It's a spectrum.
You're right. So where did this internship fall in that spectrum?
So I'll preface this with, this sounds like I'm about to get really defensive or something. Just during my interview process, I asked a question. which, by the way, the interview wasn't actually one-on-one. It was 1-on-0. I was answering questions to a recording.
Oh.
They said, do you have any questions? And, of course, you know, I didn't get answers to those questions. But I asked those questions because that indicates a lot about your personality. And I said, if somebody asked me to grab a cup of coffee, is that something I'm obliged to do? And the answer was no. I'm not an intern. I very much felt treated like an employee at CNN. I had my own responsibilities, my own duties, my own projects. It 100% was not like, oh, yeah, have the intern do that. There wasn't handing stuff off. And so, you know, you arrive there, and I think your boss has to invest some time in onboarding you and giving you projects, assigning you things to do, and making sure that you're keeping up and understanding, like, hey, I need a camera for this video project. Where do I go? What do I do? So I'm very thankful that my boss and my whole department was very welcoming. I feel like everybody at Turner, you could get lost in that building and be like, hey, where am I? What do you do? And somebody will be like, hey, this is my name, and sit down. Let me tell you all about what I do.
Right. So what were the most important things that you ended up actually doing in terms of the nuts and bolts, at the risk of asking you to list things that probably won't make very much sense to normal amateurs just listening to us, but to whatever extent you can, help us understand kind of the nuts and bolts of what you were actually doing once you were into the meat of your internship. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, like I said, I was editing a video project that was going to be shown across every class that this guy would be delivering. I started working on a guide to a software called Frame.io, which is a collaborative resource website. You know, I would spend time looking through music to add to videos and looking through our website to determine what videos could be improved upon or what content that we're missing, what we're lacking. Mm. I did have a lot of free rein in what I wanted to be doing because my boss said, you're here for 10 weeks. We want you to do what you want to do. So I had access to cameras. I would run around taking B-roll. I also started to learn how to teach a Premiere course. So Premiere is a nonlinear editing system. It's how they make a lot of movies currently if they're shot digitally. And I've been using that for 5 years now. So I'm very comfortable with the software.
Wow.
And they have a basic Premiere course that's basic, but it's 2.5 hours. And the intention is to get producers to learn how to edit their own sound bites. So if Trump says something stupid, which... you know, we don't need to get into that, actually. if somebody says something
newsworthy, yes,
if there's something newsworthy,
right,
and they want a soundbite, they don't have to send it to the edit department where you've got these people working, editing full time, where there's edit requests. This producer can figure out how to sit down and grab this video of somebody speaking and grab a soundbite without interrupting the workflow. I mean, you're not interrupting, but you're occupying resources.
Sure.
When, ideally, you know how to do it yourself.
So, and because you had so much acquaintance with this, you were able to try to maybe start to put together something that would amount to kind of a tutorial for it.
So I would be teaching this 2.5 hour course, ideally. What I found was that I'm so comfortable with the software, it's hard to bring myself down to an absolute novice level of, you know, so I'm just doing this stuff. And then people would be like, wait, what did you just do? Like, what is that? I'm like, oh, well. Duh.
Yeah, right.
I grabbed the video and I dragged it into the timeline. But, of course, you need to verbalize all that and explain these things. So
right.
There were definitely a lot of struggles where these things that come naturally to me, I was like, step back. How are they thinking? What does this look like to them?
Absolutely. No, that's one of the great challenges of just about any kind of teaching. And I should think, especially with that kind of thing, especially as technology advances and it becomes more and more seamless and effortless. You are doing steps that you give no thought to whatsoever, but other people need to be aware of those steps when they're at the outset. What about, for instance, when you said you would be editing film or editing some kind of footage of something or other? I mean, what kind of an assignment like that would be? I mean, what would you be given and what would you have to sort of edit away? Or typically, what would those editing projects be?
So, you know, that's not something I really got into because I was in tech training. You know, I wasn't making resources for the news. I wasn't making content that was going to be aired on CNN or posted to the website. But one day I did shadow a news team. So I was sitting with an associate producer who... it's hard to describe what an associate producer does, so we don't need to go that route. But and I was just sitting next to her, and she had some video that she needed edited, and so there was it was an interview, so there was back and forth, and they had two camera shots, and we just had these two camera shots for like an hour. And she had a time code, so I went into that system that holds all of CNN's content for the week, and there's a whole editing process behind the scenes of. It's pretty different from how normal editing works because it's directly integrated between Premiere and this website system server. So I brought it into Premiere, and she wanted a split screen where on one side was one guy talking, and then on the other we had the guy giving the response, and down the middle was a white border. And so, you know, using my editing skills, I put that together, and it went out to air just an hour and a half later as wow. I was sitting in the news. So. It was very cool to see my content on television.
Right, if not your name.
My name didn't go up. Yeah. They don't credit every employee at CNN. But,
no, afraid not.
But there was plenty of pride there.
Sure, that was your handiwork that you were seeing. So, well, one of the things, unfortunately, we have to talk about is that your experience at CNN, your internship, was interrupted at one point. So tell our listeners what I am talking about.
So, as I was saying earlier, I started to learn how to teach a Premiere course, and I was on track to make that happen. But unfortunately, I fell ill, severely ill. I had kind of been battling a cold for about a week, and stuff was getting better.
And by the way, where was this in your 10 weeks?
This was, I remember I went home, which air travel might have affected my illness. I went home at 5 weeks,
okay.
So halfway through, and then I believe, it must have been week six. Right as I was about to enter week seven, the Sunday before I was supposed to go back to work, I noticed I felt terrible.
In what way?
It was weird. It was unlike anything I ever felt. I was just 100% fatigued. Hmm. Like moving was hard, and I just was tired, didn't want to do anything. And my throat started hurting, I remember. I could feel something on my right, like right below my jawline. Which is where your tonsils are. There's a little foreshadowing. And so Monday, I woke up, didn't go to work, went to urgent care instead. They were like, oh, yeah, you got some mucus or I don't know. There's stuff going on. You've got an infection somewhere in your sinuses. And so they gave me a medicine called azithromycin. I got the prescription, took it. That night felt terrible. I was up every hour just going to the bathroom and I remember I must have had a wild fever because I was going really back and forth between super hot and super cold.
Mm.
So I didn't sleep at all that night. It was a terrible experience. And then the next morning I had rashes on my hands. They didn't hurt, but my hands looked terrible. And so I called urgent care and they said, oh, you're allergic to that medicine, which was new to me. I'd never been allergic to anything. And then so they prescribed me new medicine. I went to Target. On a whim, I bought a thermometer, which I should have bought days before, and I tried it as soon as I got home, and I was at 104.
Wow.
Which is that's the temperature. And so I called a friend and went to the ER, and they were like, oh, you've got – and by now, underneath my jaw on the right, it was starting to really swell, and I could feel my throat starting to get sore. I had tonsillitis, and – I was also trying to battle this allergy to a medicine that sticks in your body for 10 plus days because it really takes its time. And then, you know, after the ER threw me in the hospital and just, an afternoon turned into an evening, turned into overnights. And I was just laying in the hospital with we fought a fever for 5 days. My dad came down, which helped a lot with interacting with the nursing staff. And they tested me for a lot of stuff. You know, they're taking blood about twice a day. They had an IV. I couldn't eat because just nothing was staying down.
Mm.
And, so fever for 5 days. My heart rate was about 120, 130, which is for 5 days straight, basically.
Wow.
Like, you know, it's I've been comparing it to a mile jog for 5 days straight. So it's like I did an ultra marathon.
Right. And even for a cross-country runner as you are, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it was not enjoyable. And so they battled that fever. They got it down. They never found anything. They ran all these tests. Nothing came back positive, but they have a feeling it was either hand, foot, and mouth disease, which I hear has been going around this summer especially. Or it could have been just a virus in my bloodstream. They would take blood, and they were like, usually your white blood cell count is this, and right now it's three times that. So your body's fighting something really hard right now.
Right.
And so then I got out exactly a week later and spent a few more days recovering. I had lost 20-plus pounds, and not an enjoyable way to not an enjoyable way to lose 20 pounds.
Right.
Not a good diet.
Right, right. And of course, it's no fun to be that sick far, far, far from home.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so that was not a fun interruption. But I received a lot of support from friends, both in Atlanta and back home, and my whole department was very understanding about me being out. Never got around to teaching that premier course because, you know, you got to get approved to do that. And I didn't have the time to get there.
Right. Just robbed you of a little bit of time then.
Yeah.
So you had a bit of internship, though, left once you
were
out. I had
8 weeks at CNN. So, yeah, 6 weeks before the hospital and 2 weeks after.
Right. Wow. How much did you know about CNN before you started this internship? I mean, was CNN something you ever watched, for instance?
Right. Unfortunately, not. I didn't have a huge amount of knowledge about it. You know, I did my research. I'm not a big news person. Before I went into this, I wasn't. You know, it's a lot of work to stay tuned in to everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah.
So I didn't know a lot about CNN. You know, living here in Kenosha, I'm a cable cutter. I don't want to pay for cable every month. So yeah, I don't watch any broadcast television. So CNN wasn't something I had a lot of knowledge of. Turner, I knew the arms of Turner and what they do and their history. But yeah, CNN, I wouldn't say I had a ton of knowledge going in.
Right. What is your overall impression coming out of this internship, and not only about your internship, but just about the organization overall?
Yeah, I think they're great. I really liked the people there. Everybody loves what they do, and CNN's really impressive in that they retain people like crazy. So CNN's 38 years old, which isn't super old in my opinion. My boss had been there for almost 35 years.
Wow.
While I was there, one guy in my department hit 30 years, and they treat their employees great. You know, I think there's a decent amount of money going around, and when he hit 30 years, he got a month off. Which, like, on one hand, a month off is a lot, but also 30 years is a lot. So,
yeah.
But there were people next door, Image and Sound, which is the like camera department. Anything that's being made by CNN as original content, that's Image and Sound. They have a field photography locker immediately next to my department, and so there are these all these camera guys who have been in the industry for 30 years working at CNN. Very impressive. How long some people had been there and how passionate they were about working at CNN. I'm coming out of it, I'm very impressed by how much work goes into making the news. There's the newsroom where you've got 100 people with just these messy desks and four monitors, and they're all on the phone trying to figure out what's going on. And there's a wall of trending topics and what's going on in the world. It was overwhelming to go in there. I liked my quiet cubicle office.
That's neat, though, that you had access to that. I mean, at least from time to time.
Yeah, I could go anywhere.
Wow. So you could see the real nerve center of CNN itself and really get a sense for what that was all about. So coming out of this internship, do you feel like it has transformed anything in terms of your aspirations for the future, of what you might be inclined to try to do?
That's something I've thought a lot about, and it's hard to say. You know, I've never worked a 9-to-5 job. That's corporate culture is new to me, and there's a lot of red tape that goes into creating content. You got to get so many levels of approval. And it's also interesting, in the spring, I had an internship with as small a media company as you can get. There are like 3 employees.
Here in Kenosha?
Yeah, right here in Kenosha, Isley Creative. And to go to about as large a media company as you can have, that's a contrast. So, I'm supposed to be blogging. I think I'm going to write a blog post about that. just contrasting, you know, in a small company, money's much tighter, and you don't just have these huge budgets where, like, oh, yeah, we've got a $30,000 camera sitting around the corner that, yeah, you can borrow that. That's fine. It's not that way. So it's interesting to look at CNN and see how they use their resources and interact with each other.
Right. So what kind of work do you hope that you will be able to do once you are done with Carthage? Assuming that Carthage graduates you.
Right. Fingers
you
crossed.
Right.
I'm actually going part-time as a student this next year. I've only got 4 courses left, and time and money-wise, I thought it was preferable to take 2 courses in the fall and 2 courses in the spring. Mm-hmm. I get January off. I get a nice break. And I'm using that as an opportunity to transition into the workspace. I can kind of expand myself as my time will free up into freelance work and finding jobs in the area that will take me on a more contractual basis as opposed to come here 9 to 5. So I'm, like I said, transitioning to the workspace. Ideally, what I want to do after college is some form of camera work and editing. I really like the entire video creation process, which makes it hard to go to a big company like CNN where you've got these editors that sit in the edit bay all day. They don't touch cameras.
Right. So it's when you get into that environment, then you're talking about a fairly high level of specialization.
Absolutely.
And you would prefer not to be quite so specialized.
I like it all. I'm somebody who gets bored fast by doing the same thing over and over again. So, you know, my ideal day would be like shoot with a camera for a few hours and then edit for a few hours and then spend some time. You know, I'm a business minor. I like responding to emails and interacting with people and working out how to make a project perfect.
Hmm. Well, and I suppose you're coming of age at a time when this is more and more a part of the world, not just what we immediately think of as the entities that create video. I mean, documentary filmmakers and what, and places like CNN, but all kinds of aspects of the whole corporate sphere are into the production of video in all kinds of ways.
I think 20 years ago, being a communication major meant something else. I think, you know, the idea that, oh, communication isn't a specialized major. Now I think that's a benefit. You know, I can go out and do anything. I can get a job in HR, or I can go manage a company, or I can go make videos on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability that a communication major has taught me, liberal arts, taught me a lot of different things, a wide spectrum. I think that is very much a benefit nowadays where, you know, and especially we see the job market changing. We don't know what jobs people are going to be working in 5 years.
Right. Well, and even a given position, even if you kept the same position for 10 years, chances are from the start of that to the end of that, that job itself would change.
Totally.
And the responsibilities you would have. I'm reminded of something Cokie Roberts said, who is with NPR and also ABC, when asked in an in-service about you know, what her advice to youngsters interested in getting into what she does. She said, get a liberal arts education because, you know, you can learn to cut and edit tape, you know, down the road, but, you know, be secure as broad and rich an education as you can, and that equips you for all kinds of things that you can't even imagine are out there for you.
That's why I didn't go to film school. I was told all throughout high school, you don't need to go pay somebody to learn how to use a camera. You can go on a set and learn how film production works, and they'll pay you.
Yeah. Well, this has worked out very, very nicely for you, and certainly excited to see where life takes you from here.
Me
Isaac,
too.
Isaac Life is about to begin his senior year at Carthage as a communication major, music and business minor, so I still hope there'll be time for percussioning in your in your future. All right. Isaac Life, this has really been fun. I appreciate
you
taking time out of your few days here in Kenosha, and glad your dad brought you, and it's great to hear a little more about your story and especially about your time at CNN. Very best wishes to you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, best-selling novelist Olin Steinhauer talking about his latest novel called The Middleman, which creates a really frightening scenario in which literally hundreds, many hundreds of Americans suddenly all disappear on the very same day. They have vanished into the underground to become part of an extremist organization. And what is next? What does this group have planned? We'll talk with novelist Olin Steinhauer about that unsettling scenario. On Thursday, rescheduled from last week, a faculty colleague of mine, Dr. Thomas Knorr, and a memorable conversation we had some years ago about a book he wrote called Soapy, a biography of G. Menon Williams, a very unconventional public official who, in a sense, broke away politically from his very wealthy family to become one of the most intriguing figures of his generation. On Friday, Donald P. Ryan, author of Beneath the Sands of Egypt, Adventures of an Unconventional Archaeologist. And on Monday, Beyond the